When I was a fairly new birder, right after Russ and I moved to Duluth, I went on a winter field trip to look at snowy owls and watched one get trapped and banded. The bander used a fake mouse tied to the end of a fishing line, which he cast out on the snow. The movement as he reeled it in instantly caught the owl's attention. Within seconds, the owl took off straight for the bait, only to get trapped in a net. The bander quickly and gently put the band on the bird's leg, applied a colored dye to its forehead so he'd recognize the owl and not have to put it through this procedure again all winter, recorded the necessary data, and released it. I don't think the bird was held longer than 3 minutes total. The body of research this one bander has produced in the 4 decades he's been banding has been important to our overall understanding of snowy owls. His was some of the very first research to establish that some individual snowy owls not only migrate south every year, but return to the same winter territory year after year as well. He found that many of the snowy owls that migrate south are not emaciated, but rather in excellent condition, something that obviously makes sense, because how could they fly 1,000 miles or more from the tundra if they were emaciated from the start? Even though that is common sense, it ran against the ornithological consensus of the time. Snowy owls that are picked up dead or dying are often emaciated. Necropsies usually show that these birds have been poisoned or suffered some kind of physical trauma, often from collisions with structures, wires, or automobiles, rendering them incapable of hunting. But we now know that the majority of snowy owls reaching the lower 48 states embarked on their migration as healthy, robust birds, thanks to banding data. Anyone who has watched banders handling birds can see that the process is stressful to virtually all the individual birds. But if you've observed more than a few bandings, you also can't help but notice that many of these individual birds benefit from the banding process. One of my owl banding friends, who occasionally trapped deer mice in his house, froze them while they were fresh and brought them thawed when he was banding cavity roosting owls. He didn't lure these birds into nets, just reached into their roost holes in the daytime to capture them, but when he noticed that one was underweight, he'd give it one of those mice. Some birds are caught with injuries. I've known banders to remove excessive parasites, treat injuries, take emaciated or injured birds to rehabbers, and in other ways help individual birds they're dealing with. And the lives of hundreds of snowy owls have been saved thanks to banders, who can capture them at airports and relocate them so both people and those owls won't be killed in airplane collisions. Rarely, the banding process itself does cause injuries or can even kill individual birds, but in all the years I've been watching banders, I've never seen a single case of this, so I know it's exceptional. Banding has provided an incredible body of knowledge about most species, knowledge that has directly improved their conservation. Although banding has helped individual banded birds in very rare cases, from what I've personally seen, the harm it causes individual birds is far, far rarer. So I give a lot of latitude to bird banders who follow the strict rules prescribed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Department and state DNRs for how they trap and handle birds. I hold birders and photographers to far stricter rules because our pursuit of birds is entirely for personal gain with absolutely no benefits for those individual birds. Tomorrow, I'll talk about why I think baiting owls, except by bird banders, is both unethical and harmful. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.